Welcome to the So-and-So series, readings by early career poets.
You gotta show Scott that. Scott. The guy who made the broadside, Scott Chessy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. He's right there. Here, show him.
I think the blows were scary, though.
Hey, Scott. Look at Elisa's chapbook.
Oh, right on.
It's a blue tape.
It looks more
weird, right?
Yeah.
It's
We could make a lot by doing, like, a tie-in thing.
You guys should go on tour. All right, let's get started. Is that Cat?
Yeah.
Hey, Cat. Yay. Well, thank you for coming. Yes. Polite audience. It's always a good sign. Though something I'm not entirely used to. Some things before we start. In case you haven't met Scott Chessy, raise your hand. Where are you? Yep. He did the beautiful broadside that's over here. Yeah. But what sometimes clapping is deceiving. Don't just clap. Purchase it. I feel like sometimes clapping rids you of some sort of guilt. It should not. You have not done anything yet. Keep a plug, sure. Also, there's other rope-a-dope stuff up there. The broadside from last month is up there, the pinkish one. And those are the first two of the second round of broadsides. The first 6 months of broadsides are around. See Bob. Bob's on the stairs. Bob lives here, so let's thank Bob for letting us have the reading series here. See him for any back broadsides, and also they're bound in a book called The Jungle, and that's fantastic, and it's back that way on a little stand. Anyway, ask about it if you're interested. And Scott also has t-shirts and a rack back there, so all sorts of fun stuff. One bit of news, Dottie Lasky, Dorothea Lasky, is not going to be able to make it tonight. She had an allergic reaction and can't make it. So we'll only have two readers tonight. Anything else? There is in addition to the broadsides associated with the reading series, there is a podcast. It's being recorded. So if you want to hear yourself yell at the poets. And you should check it out. Not all, because sometimes my battery runs out or I forget. But most of the readings are recorded and posted. If you just Google, Kate, what's the address? I don't even know the address.
So-and-so-series.podomatic.
It's a Podomatic thing, and I can't ever remember the address. But if you Google podcast in the so-and-so series, it'll come up.
It's also on the so-and-so webpage.
There's a link on the so-and-so webpage. I don't know why I don't know that. Okay, I think that's enough. Our first reader will be Jennifer Firestone. She is the co-editor of... This is the right order, right?
Yeah.
We went back to this. Jennifer is the co-editor of Letters to Poets, Conversation About Poetics, Politics, and Community, forthcoming in October from Saturnalia Books. She is the author of Holiday, published by Shearsman Books, Waves, published by Portable Press at Yo-Yo Labs, and From Flashes and Snapshot, both books published by Sona Books. Her work has appeared in How To, Lungful, Can We Have Our Ball Back, 14 Hills, Mia Poesius Magazine, Ducey, 580 Split, St. Elizabeth Street, and others. She is the poet in residence at Eugene Lang College, the New School for Liberal Arts, and she lives in Brooklyn with her husband and their infant twins, so she's probably tired. Jennifer Firestone.
Thank you. I'm very tired, but maybe we'll make something good. Be loopy. This is the first time I'm away from my infant twins, so. Aww. Damn it, why did you? Thank you, Chris, so much for having me here, and thanks for Bob. Where's Bob? Thanks, Bob. And Scott. Where are you, Scott? Anyway. Oh, thanks, Scott, for doing those gorgeous broadsides. I'm not going to clap. And who else? Thank you for those two guys who helped us find this reading. We were following the pineapples because they showed us that we merged in our mind the so-and-so reading series with the pineapples, and so we followed the pineapples all the way up. So thank you for helping us.
Oh, did that not work? I was doing that too.
Well, there was actually a door with a big, colorful pineapple on it, and I opened it, and it was an empty space. I mean, it sounded like there was someone in the background, but there wasn't any great grand prize, so. Yeah, it's a huge pineapple. Okay, so I'm going to read from two works. The first is Holiday, and it's a book that came out this January. And it's really funny. I'll just say a couple things about it. The way that I think of the work is there was a literal trip, a trip to Italy that occurred. That's not really the basis of the work. It's more of a female traveler's experience, internal and external observations around the trip. So even though there's a lot of like specific details about the art she saw and the food that she ate, it's really a critique of these things and the economy of the artist and beauty in itself. But it's funny because when people, they read what they want. So a lot of people have come over to me and they said, I love like, you know, Michelangelo is in here and, you know, all this stuff. And they're just so excited. And I thought it's interesting to me. And right before I left, my therapist is like, I'm going to Rome and I'm bringing your book. So I don't know what I don't know what that means, but anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you. This is not what I wanted to do, but that's the beauty of it. The beauty. Okay. Foot's bone pushing through, walking beside older self, resigned to immediate pulses, compliant, anaerobic speck in a jar, a tiny hole with water. Hands held towards sky. Who's to help paper cut figures? A line of them trails off, each with a worse condition than the last. Red-lid spots suggest sores on the body, become illuminated by these zones. I should go to an ocean, hunt for water, so I can sleep, everything sheer. I have an image of ocean in me. Poke the stick, dig the salt, kelp blue, barnacle. Should images be retouched? The pink glow, compound properties are inconspicuous. Go back where body went concave in the sand. Eyes draw in color. Standing at the table, pinky extended, downed a cappuccino, bit from a croissant, and then a terrible day. The tape in me ripped, curled brown hung from my chest. The smoke and smell are killing. Standing too close to tables, collapsing. Can't hear clipped woman and geometric hair, blonde, shaggy, ice blue eyes, innocuous. We're in World War III, it's happening. Jeans shifted up by belt loops, and he's doing a fine job leading. A woman asks about animals, stacked carcasses, fur rigid with blood. She left her daughter unafraid to fly. The guide is flippant. This edifice is profound with a right perception. Do you know what was negotiated in the Pantheon? Significant work on the ceiling. Stare at it until your eyes water, till it pillows to your sight. To be this sick is inconvenient. A wary traveler is taboo. Room stapled down, barely there. This room is all bed. Heat turned to the wind. Together they push you. I will be careful not to soil the lens if you write in this journal. The water fountain isn't lovely. I suppose a picture of the lion would be just. The bread is wet. Corridors effuse the feeling of night. old ways in effect, killings old style, repeat ourselves, habit creatures. Were they gone from work? Papers said everyone suspect, one leader evil, the other a hawk. Appraisals depend on group you join. Detectives cloud screen, blood leaks, there's work to be done. You think I could dissociate, or is that also a movement? Last language retold from other mouth. Monuments, memorials, pantheons, coliseums, bodies, torpedoes, clothes flip voluntarily. Hide under its bridge, run for the capital R, swim in its belly. It stands tall, beckons. So do gold walls, marble finger, airplane. Solace is where I'm asking the question. Row in romance, crack shell, let red shell, crack open, let red shell dry. The cloud's outline defines itself. A kiss is a ghost, is a branch, is raking. Eyes close, outcome, more stories. The idea is to love wholly. A punctured tube bleeds, red, yellow, green, smear. Ancient intellectualizing. Abstracts depend on my life. Ink scrawls a message, let love be animals, weeds. Figures spiral upward, male arm flags, rib, thighs, buttocks, architecture. I see you, Carver. She shoots from mass, eyes swoon. So smooth, sex, violence, black birds. Marble stone as mirrors, as pop aesthetics, as pedestaling. Pushed, pull, endeared, sickened. Which is it? Precarious times, not fine. Telephone line extends, buildings shade yellow, where colors mute, where planters, out of throwaway marble in a shed, 3 years later, biblical figure. Backwards with left hand, can't read his journal, 30 minutes sleep. I say talent, I say talent, I say talent is a tall bird creeping. Don't waste a minute. Make something out of everything. The canvas productive for market. Donatello carves St. George, advertises him. Pay for a supper for me, and I will make the saints go into the niche without trouble. Carte blanche to 300 figures on ceiling. Climb scaffolding. Proud to be buried in floor, paid for, heaven. Making up a holiday, start by the water. I left first, straddling the sea. Following the others, a procession, choose which rocks to see. Over the bridge, slopes dictate the way. Below it shines. Don't stop for reflection. If it's not after this turn, I failed. So those are just a couple poems from Holiday. And I'm going to end with just some poems from a manuscript that I published a chapbook of, a section of this manuscript called Flashes with Sona Books, which is a really nice kind of micro press in Brooklyn. And the only thing I'll just say about Flashes is I feel like the writing in some ways is sort of a reaction to what I was doing in Holiday, which is really about, I was really feeling beaten down as the tourist from like my guidebook's instructions on what to see and how to feel. And so I was really trying to internalize this very like pared down documentary kind of like, you know, pushing language. And so with Flashes, I wanted to go in the reverse of that, and it was about really using like a long, messy, sort of prosy line. It's a it's a prose poem that's book length, basically. And I was practicing with like how much the long line could like accumulate in its listing. So it's sort of an opposite kind of thing. Flashes. The rectangle above is bone dry today, and today is the day we change our views. We see bubbled wall in chance as a new addition to neighborhood development. Not bad, old gentrification. Instead, we say together, beautification. We are hot, hotter. Red devils wagging our tails, steams from throats coating observing trees. We flip silver communicators, open our compacts, press our tiny palms. We're linked in one huge network, migrating gray upon gray. Unpoured like animals from the ark, we became friendly. Like old days, we offered each other liquid, put away green bills, undid our jackets, clustered. We approached a bridge, began to walk. The idea of home was in us. When we left behind the working wise man, we sang a railroad song. We chimed as cowbells. We had gotten immense. Flown up the food chain from ants to big people, returning to our human states with our human face that shared the same questioning and sensitivity, we were ferocious in our love again. My, she has pretty hair and lips. My, she is wound up today, 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 the city day of talking. She is on the screen that went on when my littlest toe approached the wood crack. She is starched and suited and disinterested in weaklings. She has the latest, and I turn down the blinds. When it's damp, there's no forgetting. Your skeleton shivers it in. It's painted out there through the glass, and if you power on, it will be detected. Despite birds scratching the branches, there's nothing happening. You want a jolt? A blender action. So you enter a long silver tube and jostle, your spokes twisting from your protective receptacle. You use black and white on your hair. You're wrapped in plastic, a well-wrapped item. A voice alerts. Elections are chortling, searching for slogans to be repeated, recorded, repeated, because they believe only when necessary. And lots of brothers, sons, sisters gone dying here, here, here. He may be stiff, not the rodeo contestant, the wide-brimmed smiler. He may be tall, his proportions easily imitable, a caricature awaiting, but the switch shall fold into his. Oh, all shall pray. Determined by where you grill your food. If you're on top and look down, you're okay. And if you have a wall around your cooking, you are better. You may have those surgically equipped clamps and jabbers to get good roasting done. But if you're at the bottom, you're in a lot with cans, cats, and alcoholic beverages. You're plastering the tar with Frankfurters and forks. You're being the loudest to become visible between green and mean black walks. To not walk when stuffed, when willing to walk away from words and be like cotton. To see that decisions must be made on what is best for you when production's down and the idea of slowing is preposterous. You sent the little message droopy bow and hope through buzzing it receives, gets received, and has with hope favorable outcomes. Quick, tear out the rubber. The report flutters in that world. Will be lit in 1 hour. Fuzzy with fuzz, obedient. A quick update. Many reported anxious with social issues, in particular in relation to habitat, due to health, heat, and other unknown circumstances. All drugs are now unavailable, and so we just stay home. When writing about heroes, you feel pride, become big equipment automatically. Teflon president, smooth-coated. Reporters felt his clothes were working. His writing was imaging pictures steamed into white foreheads. We galloped by his side. We said, yay, the king is here. Some say he would have been better in a royal town. He said there was a problem between reality and fiction, fantasy and fact. Behind flattering backdrops, too far for reporters to ask questions, each to one's corner, were. It's better to you than you are to you. Get away, run, while the creep turns his head. Get to an alley, hop the nearest transporter. You're in the middle, you're starting to film. Rolls go faster and faster by. You see morning flicker like the new egocentric. You say orange is immediate. You pile strappy objects, gloss your big skin. Here you come to the wilderness where everything is brick and stone. Trees are really smaller infrastructures, transmitters, shiny poles concealing communication. The flowers are people flying on bikes. The air is really boxes lived in, and space is only a word that itself is only a word until that itself is formed. You see the orange flower. You think it's reminiscent of something, but it remains unidentifiable. Revving up their power bodies, they lift off to space. The fling of their motion leaves us grappling for our own breathing valves. Dumbfounded and dumber still, we're late for employment, and all passages seem derailed. If you buckle, you can grasp a twanging pulsar, take a ride, meet your deadlines. To watch the clouds move, you move with it, wish to be dragged by a balloon. Breeze is halting, and you cease. Inside this ruby is where you were born, studded, juice-colored, unable to wipe away the day. If it's dark towering, we could be okay, but pulse of fire pumps. Masterful plan of medieval torture. We watch the bowed men kneeling, reminded we too are remnants held together. We dip with the first blunt stroke, wobble with a lack of spinning top let go. Bound to image, bound to orange. Are you listening, screen? This is about you and me living. This is about God. This is about heroism. This is about no stars tonight, whales. This is about the heat that burst and continued, whales. This is a eulogy to the living. This is an emotion less time. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Let's see, our second reader and final reader will be Sarah Rosenthal. She's the author of How I Wrote This Story, Margin to Margin, 2001, Sittings, A. Ben, 2000, Not Chicago from Melodeon in 1998, and Manhattan from, I can never say this press, Spuitendoevil.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. And that's in Brooklyn, right? Her poetry, fiction, reviews, essays, and interviews had appeared in numerous journals, including How To, Bird Dog, Fence, Lungful, Denver Quarterly, and Boston Review. Her poetry has been anthologized in Bay Poetics from Faux Press in 2006, The Other Side of the Postcard, City Lights, 2005, and Hinge, Crack Press, 2002. Sarah has created a commissioned multimedia installation based on her poetry for the San Francisco Exploratorium Museum. She is the recipient of the Leo Litwack Fiction Award, the Primavera Fiction Prize, and a grant-supported writing residency at the Vermont Studio Center. Her collection of interviews, A Community Writing Itself, Conversations with Avant-Garde Writers of the Bay Area, is currently being considered by several publishers. She writes curricula on writing and reading for the Developmental Studies Center, a nonprofit publishing house, and teaches creative writing at San Francisco State University. Sarah Rosenthal.
Thank you. Thank you to Chris and Scott and Bob and others who participated who I don't know about. Thank you, Jennifer, for that really mind-blowing reading. It's really hard to go after it. I made a quick switcheroo of a couple of poems to try to hook in with Jennifer's incredible observation of contemporary urban life as I see it. I was really struck by the smashing together of this kind of sponge-like intimacy, absorbing of the pulse of the now and the urban now with this critical distance that's very filtering and commenting, sort of smashing those together, I think is something that your work really does for me very powerfully. I'm going to just read two pieces that are more recent and then dive into a chunk of Manhattan, which is the forthcoming book that Chris mentioned. These poems are about the animal. Urban bred beasts, tiny for tiny condos held at crossings. Plastic bag a glove, it too is fashion. Dress replica in window, bound breast, spitting image. Are at their best equinoxes. What fool am I, they say in their tongue. I've a grandmother, a dimple, like anyone. David, could I have a swig of your beer?
It's empty.
Oh, it's empty? Jennifer?
I think I have one swig
you
left.
Hate to swig.
No, you can. I'm giving it to you now.
She hates to
swig. If you drink it, it's the end. So.
This is
perfect.
Wet my whistle. The animal elicits giggles, takes place whatever is thought. Dead animal on street, blood on tires. Animal arm I bit, nuzzled. Some have arms, some bear them, procreate, etc. Higher order dreams, even aliens are handed animals, wear them, complaining. Whimper, muscle, elegy animal. Thinking break forms, scribbles found in code manual. Animals must remember eye exercises, back stretches. A sad lot. Meant to say sand, picking nits, some say, give examples, say others. When locations are wrong, they shut down. That's the animal.
Go to sleep, baby.
Okay, these I'm not going to read. Okay, so now I'm going to get into this chunk of Manhattan, which is a cross-genre book. It slams together fiction, poetry, and art reviews to tell the story of a woman coming of age, not so much in Manhattan, but kind of in relation to her idea of Manhattan. I mean, Manhattan's there, but it's... you'll see. And it's kind of a Russian novel. There's a lot of characters who come in and out, so don't worry too much about that. They'll sort of come and go. Some of them you'll maybe hear about a little more than others, but don't worry about them. 3. Once there was Kid Creole and the Coconuts in a famous club. The warm-up act was Night of the Living Dead spliced with Fantasia while taped ska played. Everything seemed lined up, Rachel fast-talking with the bouncers to get us in. That was Manhattan to me at its best, aggressive in a fun way. At its worst, I was at parties stuttering. I liked walking in industrial areas where people almost didn't live. I have always wanted to live in a marginal place. Before loft in the city was an option to describe oneself on online dating services. Before online dating services. Before online. Before. Going to a dance performance somewhere in Soho, I was tense meeting Rachel's boyfriend. He had connections to the dancers. One of them was a girlfriend of his brother, something like that. Afterward, trying to hold my own in a discussion about what the dance meant, barely able to speak in the face of his confident assertions, feeling that he was right on the surface, but that underneath I was right too. Often in New York, I stumbled. Standing in bars or at parties with people on the go, we were all drinking. Elaine and Mayumi had a party, vodka and sushi, and birthday cake for Elaine. Mayumi was a violinist. She loaned me contemporary Japanese novels about sex, novels that had won awards. One about a solitary man getting serviced by masseuses in the baths. I read it in Mayumi and Elaine's tiny living room. It opened right into Mayumi's bedroom, no firm wall. Luckily, they got along. Elaine had a real bedroom, so she must have paid more. She was making mini biographies for Nickelodeon. I watched her edit one on Robert Redford, his whole story in 5 minutes. Mayumi had a wall covered with exotic shoes and hats, things she wore. That party, a cute, husky Jewish man talking about his projects. He must have been 26. He seemed old to me. I was 23. The next day, a group of us recent Vassar graduates took a walk along Chelsea Pier. It was my first time in that particular corner of the city, so it was magic. Elaine, Mayumi, Rachel, Muriel, I don't know who else. Always different agglomerations of women who sparkled. A temporary home, the social, and we'd elongate it. Go get food, walk more, go hear music. Rachel and me walking past a fire station in the warm night, the firefighters all sitting around in the glow of the open entrance, easy to chat. On our way to hear Woody Allen play in his club or just after. No way to tell whether he was any good or not. He was Woody Allen. Me looking for Trevor on every corner. Trevor I'd had a crush on at Vassar. He lived in Manhattan, had grown up there. Son of a famous choreographer and a mom whose second marriage had been officiated at by the Bishop of New York. Trevor had rested his hand on my thigh once under a table, out hearing music in the village with his dashingly handsome cousin he'd gone to prep school with, and the cousin's girlfriend. I was so frightened on fire. He distanced after a while. I have to identify with my dad, who still tells his stories of lost opportunities, women who wanted him, but he was scared. I sound just like him with my tales of wounded love. But the story of my dad and the scissors was purely his. He was still a new immigrant, maybe 10 years old. An older girl had shears, said she was going to cut off his nose. He was terrified. I ran up to my room and wrote the whole story down. I was maybe 12. I had been with him and my mother in the kitchen, and probably my younger brother Charles, who would have been 3. Hannah and Paul had moved away. I ran upstairs and wrote it like a story. I didn't know what to do. At the height of my obsession with Trevor, I made myself as skinny as possible, wore dramatic streaks of blush, and my hair pulled up high and spilling down. I was trying to look like the studio art girls. Once I was in this starvation artist costume, Saturday night, I was working at a popular snack bar on campus. My freshman year roommate worked there too. She was a real anorexic, a brilliant physics major. She would peel the waxed paper off the muffins before setting them out on their tray, anything to handle food, telling herself she was doing the patrons a favor, saving them a step. Once I sat next to her on the train coming back from Manhattan after a winter break back to Vassar. We were somewhere outside Croton Harmon when the train stopped and the announcement came on, we will be stuck here 2 hours. She burst into tears. She was all twisted up in her seat. She wouldn't talk. She liked me, though, and she had been an okay roommate. So there I was. It was like I was just waiting for him to come up and grab my waist from behind, and then he did. He came behind the counter to do it. I jumped. After the night we went out in Manhattan, he started to fade away. One evening, I thought up a reason to walk the short distance from my dorm to his. in my gray maxi coat. I sat on his bed, he sat on his chair waiting for me to leave. Later he was with the French girl with long henna hair. I could never believe he'd liked me in the first place. I wish I could not tell this sad sack story, but to speak of Manhattan, I have to. One time after he'd already pulled away, my sister was visiting. We were checking books out at the library. He was behind the counter. He was work-study, like me. He said tomato, and I teased him, singing, "You say tomato, I say tomato." Hannah said later, "I can't believe you can be so funny with a guy you're so in love with." For years, every time I went to Manhattan, I was looking for his tall, lanky body, his ever more torn jeans jacket, his thick brown hair, satiny, a standing wave, the rosy splotches of his cheeks, his aquiline nose. His sister was a genuine witch, older than him. He spoke of her with awe. He'd had a terrible time in prep school, discipline issues. He felt he had a good relationship with his mom, but his dad was not emotional. At his dad's in Manhattan, he always had to sleep on the fold-out couch. Once I met him on the library steps, the forsythias were in bloom. He said, "The forsythias are in bloom." It made him so happy. I felt like I was looking at a piece of art. I saw the art, and naturally the art didn't see me. Once I met him on the library steps, it was final. The poet James Mitchell, his professor, had made a deal with him. He had to turn in 20 pages of poetry, anything, to pass. "At this point, I'm composing directly on the typewriter," he said. One time after we'd distanced and I'd gained about 20 pounds, we were both on campus over Christmas break, probably both doing incompletes. He'd been away, living in France, with someone, had become fluent. I put on a red wraparound Indian skirt and a white blouse. For one night, I felt beautiful. We walked in the snow to a bar on Raymond Avenue, drank ouzo after ouzo, icy licorice. I told him all about my screwed-up childhood, and I guess he told me about his. That was the last time we went out. I spent a lot of time after that wondering what effect my stories that night had had on him, raking over our interactions in my mind. Gray maxi, red midi, skinny, fat, act like someone, act like myself. What did he hate? I gave him critical eyes and looked through them, saw too skinny, too many patterns. I shouldn't have tracked the toddler's path so pointedly. It reaches tether, tether, teacher, back to mother and father. New coffee neighborhood, peering distance from the wharves, newspapers and directors' chairs, fog and chipped paint. Humans are dots of color among the grays. 6. I'm at some kind of new age get-in-touch workshop. I spot Trevor, so he's moved here. Luckily, my new lover is with me, so I can handle it. Then I see Trevor clambering up on a chair to read what I've written and tacked high on the wall. My list of 4 places I traveled as a kid and emotional responses to each. Born Paris till age 6 months, Manhattan 6 months to 6 years, etc. But my notes to myself in the margins are demanding, "Turn this into poetry now." I can't. What's he picking up from this? He already knows Caitlin and other younger members of my scene. Does that make me cool or hot? Caitlin and I go on an errand in suburban sun, not Manhattan, not San Francisco, more like San Diego. She bikes, I run. At the yacht club, I wait for her to do her transaction. A young, wealthy, brown-haired woman, Jewish, stretched on a chaise lounge, asks me how to manage her trip. Caitlin's not back. I order sparkling water, sit in the crowded sunny bar with all manner of luxurious chairs facing and not facing picture windows, glistening waves. Stephanie is on the couch in front of me, first roommate I had in SF. Her right leg patches of red and bruises. "My leg's getting amputated," she says. "And you're thin as a stick," I say. Then notice how crude of me in the face of her tragedy, but she doesn't seem offended. Was 300 pounds before, now maybe 190. Belly flesh hangs down, t-shirt just covers it. She doesn't care, never self-conscious. She tells me she lost weight because of the health problem, something about cells going awry. "How's your daughter?" I ask. Stephanie skips a beat, then says, My daughter is living with my ex so I can make films. She talks a while, convincing herself of this rightness. She's going to drive my car out of the parking lot. The front right wheel rides up the side of a high wall and the car's flipping. I scream, no, 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 and we land. Stephanie gets out triumphant because the car is not totaled. She leaves. Attendant points out crushed tire. What else isn't working? Riff or rift. The day my mouth burst into flames, I understood careful usage. Until then, I freely said transportation, home, perfect kitchen utensil, bridesmaid dress I didn't get to keep, ask for his phone number, no one can save you, the picture drops in the dead of night. Now I say multiple locks, seven fiddlers, four books, Hill and Dale, may I have a transfer? Eight. At the book sale, I was introducing various friends to each other. Just afterward, I spotted Trevor, not college Trevor, a different Trevor, who was at the poetry conference I went to in late September. At the reading the last night of the conference, about a quarter of the poems were about the tragedy. Assuming conference Trevor didn't recognize me, I moved along with my friend Gail to look at discounted books. But later he sidled up and I started stuttering, introducing him to my friends, trying to force myself to be nice. All these men loved my poem at the conference because they smelled some kind of Marilyn Monroe thing in it that they hadn't thought I had, and I'm not sure. So even though we didn't talk a single time during the conference, he gave me a meaningful hug at the end, and I knew he's a wino, brought his own stash and stench of cigarettes. Now in the stacks, he was blazing forth about books, but he's from another world, older hippie type, looking for girls, and I was with friends who are my younger me. He wouldn't stop talking, so we smiled and backed away into the maze of bookshelves. I think conference Trevor inspired the dream about college Trevor. And there was another connection, too. Later at that book sale, after I'd escaped from conference Trevor, I met a poet from Manhattan, where, of course, college Trevor is from. The poet is small, of Russian origin, with a thick New York presence, blazer and brownish-orange sweater, very beat, wide, flat features, saying, I miss my friends. I believe you. I read your poem maybe 4 years ago in a compendium. Yes, I was in that. I felt, this poet and I are on the same wavelength. Thank you. Exchange. Promise. Promise. Usually I live up to them. I between each snowflake. Dance. Invent a road. A road from shoulder to shoulder. Keep the rose petals in the showy bowl. 14. I forgot to say my grandparents are from Manhattan. They didn't move to Philly where my mother was raised until they were 40-ish. My grandmother had flat feet because she was so poor she had to wear ill-fitting shoes. Grandfather, potato famine origin, to New York via Prince Edward Island. Story of the twinsies, story of keep your eyes peeled, story of grandfather telling off Ormandy and getting kicked out of the Philharmonic, tried to compose, invalid, invalid, pronounce it how you want, she did, worked hard, taught languages into her 80s, and he never said I love you. In the terminal home, she finally complained, bitterly, and so then that was suspect too. Was it physical? Response, ever physical, to produce my mother. Everyone says he was a lovely man, but ineffectual. This is why I can never claim Manhattan. Who would want that one? But he treated her like an equal. This gets repeated. Lunch at Horn and Hard Arts for a nickel. My mother's people are intellectuals. They are mostly women. There is one man, kind, misguided, who disappears into his illness. There is my great-great-grandmother who is mad and red of hair. Red-haired woman goes to the loony bin. They take out her teeth, or she takes them out herself. She pulls out her own hair. There is my great-grandmother who stays up all night sewing a dress for her little girl. The little girl has her picture taken by ivory snow, golden ringlets framing her cheeks, plump hands scrubbing a washboard. Her mother says, no, fame will spoil you. Little girl grows up, receives a full scholarship to Swarthmore, takes her mother along, marries late. Her child goes to Bryn Mawr, straight A's, the stellar paper on Wordsworth. These are people who raised themselves up by their intellect. My mother just read The Life of the Mind and liked it. Let's see. Just a poem and another prose section. Wrist a brown twig draped across a red board. Yes, I will meet the physicist. Hate mail pours in. Monument to empty space. Have been changed. Have already been changed. Mind says tender. Bend. Ash blows to Brooklyn. 21. I just finished watching What About Me? Rachel Amadeo produced, wrote, directed, and starred. After I finished, I looked online, which was wrong, to feed mania for public life in which everyone's a star. Found pictures of her and her little boy and husband at a gallery opening, so she's known in a certain circle. Maybe she's been busy with child rearing? Did the movie in 93, made a short in 98, so she still had her hand in as of then. What About Me follows a woman's demise. Through a fast series of brutal incidents, she becomes homeless. Unschooled but passionately committed actors combine with black and white images of Lower East Side to create a stark beauty. Things you don't want to happen do. She's robbed, raped, run over. I stopped watching in the middle the other night, saying to Henry, you know she's about to get hooked on crack and then she'll have to turn tricks. But it turned out I was wrong. That is something to be grateful for. Everyone loves Lisa. Despite her body odor, her rags, her not fitting in, her complete lack of confidence. There are those who hate her, but hate is the ultimate perversion of love, like the hate of the landlord who rapes her and throws her out. He hates the fact that she makes him feel, so he tries to destroy the source of the feeling. Everyone, except those perverted by hate, loves Lisa. The auntie who dies, the women who knock her over with their motorcycle, Paul, the good-hearted hipster, Nick, the homeless vet, brother Vito, who arrives too late. They have no words for their love, neither does the camera. It offers pictures, the way she lays out her doll collection for sale, the way she creeps along the streets of Manhattan in her layers of rags, her gaunt, elegant face. Blood streams down her right temple after she's run over by the motorcycle. A good Samaritan named Paul takes her in, gives her a bath. She hides in the bathroom, staring at her stunned reflection, ribs poking through, black matted hair hanging down, smears talc to a smooth death mask. Asks Paul to take her to the Statue of Liberty, who also has a streak down her right temple. Yes, it is a wound. Liberty is Lisa, is Mary, is Jesus. The equal signs fly from freedom to suffering, like Lisa flung from mainstream to marginal. The credits are rolling. See them go up and up, off the screen and into the black. End of story. Not quite. Why is it, really, that the characters and the relationships between the characters are so compelling when no one seems schooled? It's because Rachel, the writer, director, producer, actress, is inside Lisa, the character, inhabiting her. Rachel communicates her intense, single-pointed demand that Lisa be taken seriously by staring out of Lisa's eyes, speaking Lisa's few and slow but blunt words to everyone Lisa comes into contact with. Musicians and artists of the Lower East Side, circa early 90s, pals of Rachel's, I assume. Whom Rachel cast for her low-budget movie, these friends of Rachel's who become Lisa's lovers. Because everyone, as I said, is Lisa's helpless lover. having fallen hopelessly in love with a desperate woman, a woman of desperate circumstances, a woman brutalized by our world. We are wedded to her fate. Thank you.
Another hand for Jennifer and Sarah. Thanks again to Bob and Mary, who couldn't make it tonight. She has to work. Also lives here, also does Rope-A-Dope Press. Thanks to Scott for his beautiful art. Thanks to you all for coming. Please hang around, enjoy the snacks and drink. And the next reading is, I'm going to forget, June 7th. It is three Black Ocean authors. Well, actually, two Black Ocean authors. Black Ocean Press is here in Cambridge. Or there in Cambridge. There in Cambridge. And the editor, I can never say his name, Jonica Stuckey, will be reading. Paige Ackerson Keeley and Zach Schoenberg will be here on the 7th. So please come out to that too. Have a good night.
Thank you.